Tom Clonan currently lectures in the Dublin Institute of Technology in journalism, political communication, public affairs and research methodology. He's an author, a journalist, security analyst, a parent and a carer, and a well-known advocate for disability rights. His time in the army and in particular in the Irish peacekeeping forces in the Lebanon has shaped his views on global citizenship, rooted in the army's mantra, leave no one behind. His PhD research led to him becoming a whistleblower about sexual violence against women in the army. He became an advocate for disability through his own experience of the challenges involved for his son, Owen, who, as Tom says, is disabled not by his illness, but by a republic that treats him as less because of his condition.
To put it in context, so I have four children, ranging in age from 16 to 8. And in this centenary year, we're being asked by people like Michael D. Higgins and others to reflect and consider what kind of a society do we have? What kind of a republic is this? And having had no previous experience of disability, I've never had any experience of disability whatsoever, but my son has a neuromuscular disease which has progressed. I mean, so when he was born, he had a normal labour, normal childbirth and delivery, and he hit all of his developmental milestones. And at around about 18 months, he went from walking back to hand railing on the furniture and then to sitting down and bum shuffling. So this, if you like, introduction into this, this became for us a gateway into a parallel universe that exists and that affects about a quarter of a million Irish citizens. I think the latest census will show that there's about a half a million people in the country who are either caring for or are living with a disability, either caring for somebody with a disability or living with a disability. A half a million of our citizens. And it's a tale of two republics. It's a tale of two cities. It's an invisible world. So our son's this disease, Pelizaeus-Merzbacher disease, which announced itself at when he was 18 months old, that was the gateway for us into this world. And I am a middle-aged man. I'm 50 this year. So I was born on the 50th anniversary of the 1916 Rising. I'm now 50 on its 100th anniversary. I'm a middle-aged white male retired army officer. I should be amongst the most conservative of people in Irish society, but I have been completely and utterly radicalized by my son's experience of his difference, because his difference in Ireland is constructed as a deficit. He is constantly presented and represented as a problem. And he is not disabled by his medical condition. He is, and he's a wheelchair user. His eyesight is compromised. He has gross and fine motor issues in his upper body. He has very little motor function in his lower limbs. He has nystagmus, he has an intention tremor in his hands. He's a beautiful young man, and he's just he's gone into second year in secondary school. He's in St. Andrews in Booterstown, and he's a beautiful boy. But Irish society disables him, and it has leaves him completely and utterly as a second-class citizen in ways that are so profound and so casual and so grotesque that I don't even know where to start with it. Like, for example, he's 14, he's going on 15. He'd like to go into town and maybe have a hot chocolate and McDonald's with his friends, but he can't do that. If he wants to go into town, we have to ring the station master in Pierce Street Station, railway station, and we have to ask him to have somebody in Booterstown Dart Station to lift the ramp so that he can get onto the dart. Very often, the station, because of cutbacks in the name of austerity to support the banks, they will say that they don't have the personnel or the crew to man the dart station, so he can't go. If there is somebody there and we get into town, very often the lift is broken, and so he'll have to continue his journey along the dart line to maybe Blackrock, or even further, maybe to Dunleary, get the bridge over and then get a dart back. So what can start off as a little routine trip into town can turn into, you know, a very long, convoluted journey. Now, we have had a national discussion about equality. We had the Yes Equality referendum, where Irish people did the right thing for their gay, lesbian, transgendered LGBT brothers and sisters, not because they felt sorry for them, not because they were doing them a favour, but because it was the right thing to do. So they did, you know, they recognised that their difference is not a deficit and that they are entitled to the full vindication of their human rights. Can you imagine if somebody like Panty Bliss or Catherine Zappone had to ring Pier Street train station to go into town and to get permission to board a train because of their sexual orientation or because of their... you know, if you were a Muslim, if you were attending the Blanchardstown Mosque and you were told if you want to travel into town, you must ring the train station in 24 hours, at least 24 hours in advance. But with my son, it would not be acceptable, quite rightly so. But for my son, all of those obstacles and deficits are considered natural, inevitable, automatic consequences of his, you know, of something over which he has no control.
What you're talking about there are the massive physical impediments, physical difficulties.
But there are also, you know, cultural, philosophical, it's in the language. You know, people talk about people like my son as they, you know, will they be allowed to do X, Y, or Z? And unfortunately, that coincides with, what is it that makes us different, you know, as human beings? What does it mean? What's unique about being human? You know, there's a couple of things. We're the only species that know we're going to die, so we're conscious of ourselves, but we also communicate in symbolic ways. And to communicate symbolically, whether it's music, art, journalism, doesn't matter what it is, once you go from the first order construct of communication, of one-to-one verbal and non-verbal communication, once you go outside of that space and make a mark on the wall or a line on a piece of paper, you're mobilizing social power, you're mobilizing personal power. It's a uniquely human phenomenon. And in that realm, unfortunately, at the moment, we have an almost perfect Gleichschaltung in our public discourse, which reifies the material, which reifies physical perfection, which reifies youth, which reifies money and the pursuit of material things. We have in our media, in our public discourse, in our popular culture, in a lot of our commercial music and so on, you have the repetition of this. And obviously, you know, when you come to reflect on what it means to be a republic in 2016, and when you see what's happened in the last 10 years, I can tell you that my son's situation has deteriorated to the point where I'm absolutely terrified for him. What will happen to him when I die? So if I want to find an expression of that, if I want to find an echo of that, if I want to hear that in our public discourse, I won't. It's absent. It's not there. The so-called disabled are completely and utterly invisible. Now, if you have a sort of a, you know, if you're able to win a race or come back from Rio with the silver medal, then our very vulgar and coarse public discourse is interested in you, because suddenly a disabled person, such as that's the vernacular that's used to describe them, makes themselves useful by being able to do something that this discourse, this Gleichschaltung, can recognize. So you won't find anywhere in a public discourse, you won't find any exploration of the experience. What's it like to be a disabled citizen? You know, to be a citizen that is disabled by this republic. You won't find it anywhere. And that's what has radicalized me. And I'm very angry as a consequence. I would call for a complete and a radical transformation of how we see difference.
And is it more for you, is it more than just resourcing?
Oh, absolutely. It's the philosophical, ideological. We've gone from being Catholic Ireland to being a neoconservative, red in tooth and claw, sort of colony of the United States. And I hear constantly in our print and electronic media discussions, debates about disability and difference that fundamentally miss the point. Every time, unerring.
And that fundamental point is?
That difference needs to be recognised. It doesn't mean treating people equally. It means recognising difference and supporting it, not constructing it as a deficit. It is the same equality agenda that you'll find in feminist theory, that you'll find in queer theory. It's exactly the same. But that kind of language, the negative language of, you know, austerity, the, you know, the denigration of public services, this kind of false, this idea that you can run, you know, our public services on a business model. Mm. That, I mean, that's completely and utterly fallacious. That's ridiculous. You know, I was talking about the reification of physical perfection, of beauty, of material acquisition, of money, of wealth. The status and, you know, if roles of people like doctors, nurses, teachers, members of an Garda Síochána, you know, the caring professions, people that interact with other humans, that has been demeaned to the point that, you know, you can't recruit people in Ireland for nursing. I've been presenting to you this awful dark picture. I'm an angry man who suddenly wakes up and I'm in this dystopian republic where we have a, you know, hegemonic wall of noise that reinforce the same ideas and values. And so I can't see anything in our public discourse. I can't see a window or an opening out of that, but I can see it in the arts. I think, you know, if I sit down and talk for 2 or 3 hours about own situation or the situation of people who are different, at the end of it you might come away feeling a bit fed up. You might think this guy needs to go for a long walk, he needs to take some Xanax or whatever. But if I sing you a song, or if I draw you a picture or sculpt something, you get it straight away. And I think that is the opening, or it's the portal through which everyone in the community can meet in that space, because it's one of those things that makes us human, you know. And Michael D. Higgins, I remember he talked about when he was just coming into his first term of office, he talked about how in Ireland during the Celtic Tiger we had become less than ourselves, that by investing so much in things and objects and handbags and jewellery and fancy houses and cars, and he said that by doing that we had become less than ourselves. We had devalued ourselves as human beings. So the art and that, the act of creativity, whatever it is, that pulls us back from that.
Mm. Do you ever find yourself impacted by the effect that your own has on other people? That business of people not knowing people with a disability and not interacting with and not realizing that there's such creative potential or such potential.
Well, one of the great things is, I mean, he was fully integrated from junior infants into the local national school. So there's 40 or 50 young men out there now who will never look twice at a wheelchair.
Exactly.
And who will say, oh, is that on, you know, what, why are you in a wheelchair? You know, or what happened? Why, you know, who? And now he's in secondary school. He's in another community now that will, you know, and that's why I think this is so important.
Yeah.
As you were talking about, not like the supported studio, that it wasn't just.
No, it's not one way traffic.
Yeah, and I love that. That's the kind of the heterogeneous effect.
Isn't that part? part of, I always feel from the policy makers, they do kind of look at it as a kind of a handout thing. They don't see
yeah,
it
unfortunately, I feel that's because in Ireland, and they are going to ratify the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities, as I think that's what it's called. You know, in Ireland, the right, it's not rights based. It's configured on a charitable basis,
yeah.
And as a consequence, there's a really corrosive, toxic kind of culture of grace and favor. And mm-hmm. I mean, I think maybe the key to it lies, if Owen's illness opened up a gateway into this parallel universe, I see the way out of it is, you know, through creative citizenship. Through, because, you know, I found
equality slightly yeah. differently as well. You
yeah.
know, we get very confined by language as well, don't we? And our understanding,
so.
Our collective understanding of language, where actually, if you can just kind of change, I love the way you talk about difference rather than disability.
Mm.
You know, I think the idea of there being, it's not so much different kinds of equality, but equality doesn't have to mean everybody being the same.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but I think for some of these artists, if they hadn't met the people in the services who maybe are as gifted, they're gifted artists, but they've also studied art therapy, they understand the politics of art as well, it strikes me, the most effective of them,
mm.
which I find quite interesting. If they hadn't come across these people, their lives would be far less
mm.
than they are. But then I think what's really left out in society is what we get back from. I know Ireland kind of was touched by it during the Special Olympics, because
yeah.
they really, back in 2003, they really did see that whole thing about intention, and, you know, when somebody's completely committed to doing something. And they slightly got beyond, I felt at that stage, the God help us attitude. But they
yeah.
slip back into it. It's a kind of a default thing for Irish people.
Yeah.
Or is that to do with the religious thing as well, that we kind of have this...
Well, I think,
poor
I think Ireland...
be with us, the disabled...
Ireland... I think Ireland is in a very... like, I think we're in a period of change and transformation. And we're in a period of flux at the moment. We don't know who we are or where we are.
Well, I was just going to ask you, what do you see with all the stuff that's happened now with the scandals in charities? I think I see people really changing their attitude towards charities. Now, if they do, then the state is going to have to
just
either take up the responsibility or drop it even yeah. worse. Well, it would be good or bad.
Well, I mean, look,
reactions.
I'm involved in Dogs for the Disabled. I'm chairman of the board at the charity, and there's great people involved. I'm also involved in Fighting Blindness as a board member there. But I'd much rather see a move away from charitable configuration. Social, I think there's always room for social entrepreneurship,
mm-hmm.
but I think that basic service provision should be rights-based.
Mm. Yeah, I do think the social entrepreneurship can kind of, it can just give enough steam to somebody who's a bit further ahead
mm.
than where the policymakers or whatever, or have picked up on a good idea outside
mm.
of our own country and can move it on faster. But you
mm.
want, you don't want that work to be in the margins. Or at all states marginalised.
No, but
this is why maybe an exhibition like this is very important, because it's the weight of public opinion, and it's changing the language or making it easy for people to talk about these things, which I think, first of all, they have to see the people with disability. They have to be surprised by their ability. They have to get over the
mm.
disability and be surprised by their ability. But they also have to see... they have to see the two-way thing. I think when we're giving out charity and when we're so used to kind of boxing up our charitable enterprises in Ireland, you know, like we give money to the poor and we
mm.
help the black babies and all this.
Yeah,
you
I remember
know, we have to move on from that.
When I was in Lebanon, I was out in the Mingi men set up shops at all of our checkpoints and positions, and I was out on one of the checkpoints, and I had how many miles to Babylon? What... Jennifer Johnson.
Oh, right, yes.
So,
yeah.
Hafif, we used to call him Hafif the Thief, he
yeah.
said to me, what's that?
Yeah.
And I said, oh, it's how many miles to Babylon?
Yeah.
And he said, what's this about? And I said, it's about the British. and you know the war, World War One, and that. And he says, "Who wrote this?" And I said, "Jennifer Johnson." And he said, "A woman has written a book." And I said, "No." And I think that's where we're at with people like my son. You know, somebody with a disability has painted a picture, or somebody who, you know, that's where we're at.